Okay, right, the semi-final of the 14th Ledbury Poetry Slam. The first poet up is Miles Deacon. He's the caffeinated poet who used his full epiglottal throttle to show he can co in the first round. Yes! Oh, God, it's not over yet. But will he continue to smell the coffee and speed past the opposition to reach the slam prize first tonight? Or will he be roasted? There's more. Yeah, oh God, yeah. You're grinding his beans. Would you welcome him back for the second time, please? Here he is, Miles Deacon.
I will go slower on this one, so. So I wrote this this morning, so it's always a bit of a tricky poem to do in the morning. And this is based on an IO level teacher, Mr. Harris, who said, never put the word suddenly in your stories. This has got lots of suddenly in, so up yours, Mr. Harris. Or Zeno. Okay, here we go. I am in a boring meeting, so I doodle a picture of myself playing a guitar. Suddenly, I am the doodle, playing the doodle guitar. I am flat and black and white and have three fingers on each hand. The guitar is thin and floppy like a huge odor eater. Above me, I was proud of that one. Above me, a weird man is looking down. I can see the bulb of his nose, the hairs up his nostrils, the craggy creases in his brow, and I think, ew. What a disgusting, dilapidated creature. So puffy and greasy, those dull eyes, that look of compromise. Not like me, all sharp and clean, black and white lines, so defined. Suddenly, I'm back in the meeting. Dave from Group Risk is talking about risk appetite in direct distribution. A fake breeze from the air conditioning blows over my polycotton easy iron Marks and Spencer's work shirt. I look at my doodle and realise how stupid it is. The fingers aren't right and the guitar looks like a giant odour eater. And it looks smug. I erase the doodle and draw a picture of a banana on a skateboard. Suddenly, I am the banana on the skateboard. Zooming down a white hill at 100 mile an hour. Whee! Whee! Banana on a skateboard! Whee! Banana on a skateboard! Suddenly, I'm back in the meeting. Sandra from accounts is asking me what I think about the quarter four percentiles. And I say, I'm a banana on a skateboard! Whee! 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 After that, the meeting is much less boring. Thank you.
Next poet up will be Peter Whitten.
Peter Whitten, yes, poet number two in the semi-final. He's the genitally modified poet who treated you to a smorgasbord of words and phrases for your bits in the first round. But will he continue to tickle your fancies and demonstrate his slam virility by holding his big vodka bottle at the end of the slam tonight? Or will he have brewer's droop? He's the front to your why. Would you welcome him back for the second time, please? Here he is, Peter Whitten.
I apologise for the disgusting content of my first offering and will try to make it up to you with a road safety poem. He's in his mobile phone booth. He drives like Mr. Toad at God knows how many miles an hour in the middle of the road. And he yaks to his friends and his family constantly. He hasn't had both hands on the wheel since January 1993. And if he's heard how mobile phones can agitate his cranium, he doesn't pay any attention because he hasn't got the brains of a geranium and he fears no retribution. So, what is the solution? Well, I've just read an in-depth report on page 16 of the Sunday Sport which claims if you use a phone in your car at precisely 80 miles an hour and at that exact moment you should happen to cough, your bollocks will drop off. See? This is the way to get their attention. They don't flinch if you happen to mention the wrath of God or the highway code or the fuzz of the speed gun out on the road. It's all this macho stuff nowadays. If you want to make them change their ways, create a little panic in their hearts, you got to go for their private parts. Oh, yes, be it known, persons using the dog and bone whilst weaving around in heavy traffic face a number of hideously graphic consequences, the least of which is a highly contagious scrotal itch. Then there's rabies, scabies, pubic lice that can't be removed at any price, 21 sorts of genital warts at Dalek where there used to be balls, and those are just ringed by local calls. As for the ones from overseas, every imaginable disease can be filtered via satellite, and it will serve you rotten right if you contract via your ear extraterrestrial gonorrhea. And if there are any ladies in the audience who think all this masculine nonsense has got nothing to do with them because they haven't got a willy, then they're very, very silly. Their fate will be nonetheless painful. Their mobiles will afflict them with a brain full of unsavory notions. Their bowel motions will become uncontrollable, and their front bottom bits will be covered in zits. So the moral is, if you use your car as a telephone box, you'll catch the pox, and then your chances of getting a bit will be rather rarer than rocking or shit. Good night.
Third poet up in the semi-final will be Al Brunker.
Yes, third poet, Al Brunker. He's the open-plan poet who told you about the trials and tribulations of office life in the first round. But will he continue to employ his skills and add Ledbury Poetry Slam winner to his CV tonight? Or will you sack him? You're meeting him in the stationery cupboard later. Would you welcome him back for the second time, please? Here he is, Al Brunker.
Polite notice. Tipping is at your discretion. Please feel free to dump your rubbish here in my back garden. Do not waste your time on a trip to the council tip. Leave that bumpy mattress, the toilet with no seat, the telly with no vision, the stool without a feet, the chest without its drawers, the drum that's lost its beat, and the shavings of grass you can't be asked to bag up and bin. Chuck it all in, feel free. It's not out of politeness that I embrace your detritus. Didn't you know I was on the hunt for a door without a front? A fly that doesn't mow, a cart that doesn't go, a shower with no power, a baby with no grow, a two-legged, three-legged stool, a box that's lost its cool, has been widescreen, X-shoes, X-socks, X-box, 360 degrees of environmental chaos. Tar twat for your unpacked flat-pack tat, and I'd have had to shop around for a disabled trolley like that. Polite notice. Bring your litter from home with you. Please feel free to dump your rubbish here in this green grass urban space. It is quite right to dump your shite in this once unblemished place. Do not throw away your cash on a hired council skip. Unload your trash-filled transits under cover of dark in this previously unpolluted people's park that's now obscene, this domestic appliance mausoleum where upturned baths entomb the soil and block the paths and fridges come to die, where rats and cats wee and do poopies on deceased microwaves and decaying Zanussis. Remember those daffs we planted in honour of the Dalai Lama? They've been flattened by a soggy bathroom mat and squashed by a double divan. They've got what you might call bloody bad karma. But what the eye don't see, you know what I mean? Chuck it all in. Feel free. Polite notice. The toilet's not the only place to go and have a good dump. Please feel free to pump your effluence into the deep blue sea. It is not rude to discharge your crude with irresponsibility, sink your platforms with dereliction, threaten species with extinction, tar feathers, blacken beaches, ignore the nutter who protests and preaches on recycled pulp, polluting the public conscience with nonsense, the world is dying, another trite and trying balderdash like that. The bottom line, not the bottom of the ocean. That's what counts. Not you and me. Not the future of the earth, sustainable ecology. Chuck it all in. Feel free. Thank you.
Poet number four in the semi-final is Heather Wasty.
Thank you. Yes, Heather Wasty. She's the poet who only had to click her fingers and you all came running to catch her as one of the highest scoring runners-up in the first round. But will she continue to rant and rave her way into the final tonight, or will her numbers not add up? You're busying her words. Would you welcome her back for the second time, please? Here she is, Heather Wasty.
Thank you. I would like to speak on behalf of the apostrophe. Apostrophes, poor creatures, have no outstanding features to look at, just a tail, a head, and nothing in between. They fail to set the word alight, and we abuse them. That's not right. Apostrophes fit in. Some would say they interfere. No matter. It's a sin to put one there when it should be here. Apostrophes are lonely and simple, and they only want one thing, to be understood, for then they'll be a force for good, not put in such embarrassing positions like cheap bling. In a previous life, I was an apostrophe. Dad always told me not to hang out with other apostrophes. Dad always said it would make people talk. Thank you. So, I lived alone, while others hovered in pairs, getting friendly with any old letter. But I knew much better than that. They called themselves the inverted commas, and some of them hung upside down to show off. They sniggered and talked about 66.99, waggling their tails. Dad used to scoff and say, "Decent apostrophes do not cohabit. A pure apostrophe lives alone." Getting, excuse me, to help good nouns to keep what they own. When I turned 9, a cross young T punched a hole in my head when it got too possessive. "It's not fair," it said, standing its ground, as I squeezed myself out and tumbled down to the foot of an S. Where, yes, you've guessed. I was quickly mistaken for one of those commas and kicked into touch by a passing verb. Blinded, confused, in an alien land, a world I couldn't understand. I'd only been taught how to be an apostrophe. Lowercase living just wasn't for me. I wriggled along through a forest of feet till I came to a clearing, when who should I meet but a capital T, who'd been waiting for me. "So, you are the worm who riled my child. Now how does it feel to be down at heel?" And with that, he stood really hard on my tail. I pulled and I pulled till my tail broke off. Now I'm reincarnated as a full stop. Thank you.
The penultimate poet in the semi-final is Brenda Reed-Brown.
Right, yes. Penultimate poet in the semi-final is Brenda Reed-Brown. She's the poet who showed that climbing a ladder is just as unlucky as walking underneath one in the first round. But will she continue to step all over the opposition and rise up higher and higher to slam glory tonight? Or will she come a cropper? Her black is your blue. Would you welcome her back for the second time, please? Here she is, Brenda Reed-Brown.
"It's always, always the same, and I've only got myself to blame, but it's in my blood. I did Greenham Common, and things like that aren't soon forgotten. In my day, we knew how to be naughty, not like these kids today, just drunk on WKD-40 or whatever they call it. Anyway, in my bag I carry a flag, not with revolution's burning flame in red and black, no, a Zimmer frame in cream and latte, with pensioner rampant. I've started this new old age party, stripped off my camouflage and khaki, smart casual now and a zip-up cardi. And it was time for us to demonstrate. No shouting, we just remonstrate. We didn't want vendetta, we were after something better. And our slogan was a killer, V for vanilla. We had postcards, not placards. The others wouldn't risk it. That said important things like no VAT on biscuits. Down with things that we don't like. Support the Daily Mail. I banned that one. More Emmerdale at weekends. Bring back Watney's Ale. But as I said to the arresting officer, we didn't mean to start a rumble with that drive-by in our hood. We wound the windows down to grumble. And you know, we grumble good. And we weren't fueled by Jack, just fair trade value Sauvignon. And when that chap said, "Would you beef man?" And I answered, "Bourguignon." I didn't intend any disrespect, but it all kicked off with that, and a walking stick's quite handy when they've knocked off your best hat. And I know I should have wisdom, I should be granny who knows best, but I couldn't resist yelling, "Fucking pigs!" And I had to resist arrest. We set out to protest mildly at what annoys us all, like low-slung jeans that show boys' pants, print that's far too small, long waiting lists for hip-hops, cyclists without lights, those groups of large young people who frighten us at night, though we wouldn't dare speak up loudly because the hooligans might hear. And they know we're growing older, and they know we feel the fear of loss, not just our gloves and specs, but youth, power, love, respect, wealth, influence, health, mobility, safety, security, dignity, stability, autonomy, authority, worth, personality, confidence, independence, driving licenses, senses, sense, our homes, our rights, our friends, in fact, everything that makes life worth living. And finally, life itself. But no one loves you when you moan. No one wants to hear us rage. And puce doesn't go with older skins. We should hide ourselves in beige, but I didn't. And I'm here in the cells again. And it's always, always the same. And if that loo in the corner stinks, I've only myself to blame. Prison food's worse than on a peace march. I was on that bog all night, and it's here in this cell where I eat and sleep. Some things just aren't right. But my cellmates lent me a book to read. I'll start on it today. It's clearly meant for us because it's called 50 Shades of Grey. And I hope it'll give me new ideas on how we can get our way, because at last I've learned from history. This is the moment when I swear I'll never, ever, ever demonstrate again. Thank you very much. You've been very kind. Thank you.
And yes, finally, the last poet in the semi-final was, in fact, the last poet in the first round, and he is Spoz. He's the green poet who added the colours red and white and flagged up Italian life in the first round. But will he continue to move your hearts and hearing parts with his poetic expositions, or will he bollock-naze up? You're the extra mozzarella on his pizza. Would you welcome him back for the second time, please? Here he is, Spoz.
Oh, you are a one, Sarah Jane. That's lovely. Right, here we go. We're an endangered species, wading through feces and bent on oblivion. I just thought I'd start lightly on that one. Craving half chances, but nobody's giving them, because we got our own lives and we're too busy living them to be stopping and thinking about those on the brink and seeing they're our neighbours. We're gorging ourselves on the fruits of our labours, or as is often the case, someone else's, a twisted notion of what real wealth is, because some people judge well-being by the balance on a bank sheet. And sure, we all want to live and eat comfortably, but be honest with me. Who the fuck needs a Range Rover in London? Unless you're taking it up the heath in Hampstead like George Michael. Because a 4x4 is better by far than any car or motorcycle. Trade in your Bentley, Partex your Aston Martin. If it's a fight you're after, then you better stop starting. Because what you call a necessity is like a red rag to a bull to me. These baubles and trinkets are a vulgar obscenity. They're like a profanity that adequately displays your lack of humanity. It's just vanity. And it ain't fair. While your cup runneth over with hundreds, there are thousands and millions who don't even have cups. There's something missing. There's no pot to piss in. Can you unblock your ears because you ain't even listening? A generation tainted by a media's dissing. Disenfranchised, dismembered, discriminated, disremembered. There are whole communities of poor sods conned who keep the relative minorities in all mod cons. Their muted cries are louder than bombs as they fall on deaf eyes and blind ears. The fat end of the wedge ain't been this fat in years. A society so senseless and desensitized these days, it makes me want to mix up my cliches. But what's that self-righteous quip I hear you say about paying the taxes you're asked to pay, about earning and spending the way that you choose, about how exploitation's just another tool to use, about playing hard, working hard every day, about stepping on fingers to make your way, about the feckless reaping their just rewards? But when I tell you that your reasoning's flawed, you come back with your usual contented retort. You're just jealous, mate. Thanks a lot.
Right, that completes the semi-final for this evening. So I will now go around and get the score sheets and Elvis will entertain you.
Ah, that's pressure. Here I am again, filling in like some cheap grouting in a beautiful bathroom. Here we go. I'm going to do another new one. So you're guinea pigs a wee bit. This one is for the people in Greece. Specifically, it's for their chief, the Syriza's chief economic spokesman, who's called Euclid Sakalotos. A chief economic spokesman who's called Euclid. Isn't that brilliant? That's just, oh, it's beautiful. Anyway, I don't know what, this has just been written, so I've no idea. Well, I could call it Greece is the word. Or... because let's face it, all the media outlets are running out of cliches and puns, aren't they? All the headlines have been used now. We could call it Ode to How Little a Grecian Earns. That's not too bad, is that? We could call it It's All Greek to Me. We could call it It's a Tragedy, says Surviving BG. I don't know. Let's just get on with the poem. This is whatever it's called. Here we go. Olives up my nose, moussaka on my mind, slathered in taramazalata. I'm Elvis El Greco of Greaseland. Don't care if I'm persona non grata. Ambrosia seeker, lotus eater, permanently skint, perpetual debtor. I'm sailing up the creek while all the poor Greeks make mine a metaxa, pass the feta. Give me Aristotle and a bottle of ouzo. Give me sun, sea, sand and Socrates. A Venus de Milo floating on a lilo. Sweet honey on a little Plato, please. Fountain of democracy, home of the gods, a world of light, magical, magnetic, where Homer means much more than Simpson, land of classically proportioned aesthetics, of Archimedes, Pericles, and Plutarch, Sophocles and Aristophanes, Demis Roussos, Mr. Papadopoulos, Pythagoras, Euripides. Austerity, austerity, all is austerity. That line should be read by a Greek chorus. From corybantic excess to dystopian distress, this poem's written with the aid of a thesaurus. Elysium's whitewashed walls are graffitied. Between Scylla and Charybdis lies fear. Halcyon days are hazy memories. Here comes Europa's purblind profiteers, peddling their pusillanimous myths, handing down punishment that's Sisyphean. They're piling Pelion on top of Ossa. It's time to leap into the deep blue Aegean. Go Hellenic, take a selfie at Delphi. Work the oracle, give Greece a chance. Raise a retsina to Athena's wisdom. Bring out the bazookies and dance. Because figs cannot be gathered from thistles. Even Euclid couldn't square a bloody circle. EU, EC, ECB, IMF, F off. And take your beach towel off that lounger, Mrs. Merkel. Thank you. Thank you.
Right. Thank you, Elvis. We now have the marks for the semi-final of the 14th Ledbury Poetry Slam. In order of performance, they are as follows. Miles Deacon, 268 points. Peter Whitten, 262 points. Al Brunker, 276 points. Heather Wastey, 260 points. Brenda Reed Brown, 277 points. And Spoz, 282 points. So, the two poets in the final of the 14th Ledbury Poetry Slam are Brenda Reed Brown and Spoz.
The order is decided by the toss of the coin. Spoz, as you're the highest scorer there, you get to choose. So if you heads, tails. Brenda, first or second? Second. Please welcome back to the stage, Spoz!
You know when you're really prepared? Not. Right. Love letter to Jeremy Clarkson. Not. I apologise in advance. I'm from Birmingham. It's the way I speak. Tory Jeremy, son of Clark, do you get dressed in the dark? If you're on my ship, I'd disembark. Petrol in your veins. Let me inject a spark. Clarkson. You embody everything that's crap with humanity. When I think of you, my speech turns to extreme, obscene profanity. You fucking twat, you see? It happens quite a lot. When your parents had you, they should have had you shot. Was it them that taught you that selfishness was best? Clarkson, you're a piece of shit. I'm glad I got that off my chest. You impose your piss-poor opinions with your laddish bully boy tactics. Be friends with you. I'd rather chew some second-hand prophylactics. Thank you. You display hints of misogyny. It's quite an annoying trait. I bet you think of big, fast cars when you masturbate. You and those other two toffee-nosed twats presenting Top Gear from the telly to an audience of bimbos and wannabe boy racers ferociously jerking their jelly. You're nothing but a fossil, like the fuel you like to burn. Take this Skoda for a spin and please do not return. I know you don't like Birmingham. Frankly, I don't care. It's not a patch on your Oxfordshire home. So stay the fuck down there. You're tiresome. Schoolboy racial slurs and your right-wing rhetoric makes me want to beat you with a great big fucking stick. You're arrogant, you're bigoted, you're self-absorbed and blunt.
And now let's welcome our second finalist in the 14th Ledbury Poetry Slam from Breedon near Tewkesbury. Would you welcome back for the third time, please, Brenda Reed Brown.
I'm going to tell you a story about a prisoner, a con. Of course, I can't give you his real name for now. I'll call him Ron. And I don't think at the moment I'll tell you about his crime. It might prejudice your thoughts, though it never affected mine, because in my little writing group were an arsonist, a burglar, two rapists and a dealer, and on my right, a murderer. Three of them were given to bouts of real self-harm with aerial views of railway junctions blazoned on their arms, and their lives were born in chaos. Most had been in what we call care, though I gathered from what they told me there was only tough love there. Ron's mum was paranoid, schizophrenic, and since he was a lad, he'd cared for her. It was all he knew. He didn't have a dad, and he became agoraphobic, couldn't bear to go outside, started drinking, slowly found within himself a place to hide. So for Ron, you might think a prison cell was not such a bad place to be, but just like every prisoner, he wanted to be free, and he found liberty in writing. Poetry gave him wings. He found his words. He found himself. He found a new song to sing. I encouraged the group to think of things outside the prison walls. Poetry's better than drugs, they said. And I guess that says it all. It was a kind of therapy. In Ron's imagination, it was me that made him feel better, though in truth, the joys of creation were what lifted him, but he got it wrong. Of course, he would never say what was on his mind or in his heart, but a poem gave it away. "I've Fallen in Love with You," it was called. It was meant for me, that was clear. It explained why, given a parole date, Ron's eyes had filled with tears. Now, I've always thought that honesty's best. We sat down, I meant to explain, but what I said was, "The imagery's weak, the rhythm's not right. You'll need to work on it again." Next week, Ron was nowhere to be found. I didn't understand till I asked another guy from the group. He just stared down at his hands and said, "Didn't nobody tell you, miss? Ron jumped from the roof to the floor. Nobody knows why he done it, miss, but he won't be round here no more. We all dragged out our mattresses, thought we might like break his fall, but it's too far from up there, and he broke his back. We couldn't do nothing at all." So why did he do it? I'll never know. I'll never see Ron again. The prison system's suspicious of anyone who dares call a con a friend. Maybe the agoraphobia launched his jump, his fall, because the ultimate womb of death is surely the safest place of all. I don't want to think my cold words were to blame. That's not how I meant it to be. And perhaps thinking in metaphor made him believe it's the only way to be free. But Ron was a man who could have known life, a person just like you and me. And what I'm struggling to try and say, what I could have said at the start, is that inside every prisoner, and I mean every prisoner, inside every one of us, there beats a poet's heart. Thank you.
Another new one. Thank you for being patient with these new ones. I've been a busy boy. About time. Right, I'm going to adopt a generic and indeed quite poor and frankly insulting West Country accent for this one. Just because the subject matter warrants it. It's kind of rural scary, this poem. It's kind of Wicker Man scary, although that was filmed in Scotland, so that will justify any geographical fluctuation that may occur. Here we go. The raven is croaking in the yew tree. The owl is shrieking in the withered oak. A dread leaden pall shrouds our barren land. Decay wraps us in his sulphurous cloak. The serpent slithers through the jungled weeds. The beast festers in his wormy bed. Fear is lurking in the sullen shadows. Deep in the cankered forest, terror treads. The silver-mantled moon turns bloody. Dismal discord hammers in the forge. The jaws of darkness devour all hope. The wailing winter wind whispers, "George." Steeped in gore, caressed by Satan's claw, out of Hades, the devil's spawn is torn. I've seen something nasty in the woodshed. The thing that dare not speak its name, Osborne. Here's Georgie, Porgy, Prince of Darkness. Gnash your teeth, weep, rend your garments, writhe. Lock up your daughters, he's the Poundland Poldark. I'll wiggle in his deficit scythe. Drop your trousers, Britain, bend over for the fiscal Wackford squeers. A reservoir dog's Mr. Pasty Face, busy chop, chop, chopping off ears. Not just a chancellor, an S&M chancellor. Marquis de Sade's sour, I've gone Scottish. Marquis de Sade's sour milk smile, it justifies it. Caligula in a Bob the Builder hat.
Poverty's Mac the knife, cut and vile. There's something nasty in the woodshed, mother. Listen to my Edvard Munch silent scream. Oh, sweet baby Jesus Christ Almighty, please tell me that it's all a bad dream. Thank you.
Right. Okay, so now we come to the marks in the final of the 14th Ledbury Poetry Slam. In order of performance, they are as follows. Spoz, 265 points. Brenda Reed Brown, 284 points. So the winner of the 14th Ledbury Poetry Slam is Brenda Reed Brown. So let's welcome on stage the losing finalist. I'm sorry, Spoz. I didn't know how else to describe you.
Loser!
Yeah, let's give him a really warm round of applause. Here he is, Spoz.
Thank you.
Now, please welcome to stage the winner of the 2015 Ledbury Slam. She came on, she was drawn out the hat first, and that is an achievement in the world of slam, to come all the way through and win it. Please welcome Brenda Reed Brown! I've never won a vodka ball.
Say thank you. What a cracking slam.
It was.
That was really, really good. Well, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I'd just like to say a few thank yous to the people that kind of helped to make the event what it is. Firstly, the judges who were marking on your behalf. So for writing, it was Jill and Stuart. Performance, Elaine and Richard. And for the warmth of the audience response, Martin and Molly. Round of applause for them. I'd like to thank David on the sound. Thank you very much for filling in with light music there. Thank you. The event manager, Paul Graham. But most importantly, I'd like to thank the poets who took part tonight and just gave us an absolute cracking evening's entertainment. Thank you so much for taking part in this event. Thank you. And hey, you know, this is a slam. Give yourselves a warm round of applause. The audience who've come tonight. And, you know, what can I say? I spent a long time hosting slams with Marcus, but he's now retired and off to pastures new. And it's been great hosting the slam tonight with you, Elvis. So thank you very much for that as well.
Pleasure.
Elvis.
Could we have a huge round of applause for the fabulous Sarah Jane Arbery?
They've stolen all my words. I have got to say thank you also to the Arts Council. That's notwithstanding the fact, James, that the relationship manager for the Poetry Festival is here tonight. We always say that. thanks to the Market Theatre who sponsored this event. And thanks, of course, to Sarah Jane, our Ledbury Poetry Festival number 14 veteran, and to our Ledbury Poetry Festival number 14 virgin, Elvis. And It used to be the thing where we used to give away as part of the Poetry Festival a nice little vase or a little peanut bowl or something like that. Anyway, it's special Ledbury cider now, which I'm probably you've seen if you've been to other events. And it's a big thank you to these two, because without these two, we wouldn't have had anything. Thank you very much. And that's the end of tonight.
Yes, thank you. Good night. Go well.